Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line. This is Carl, your host. Kat is on sabbatical. Apparently, she is bonding with some beings from another planet. And so for today, and for today only, we'll be joined by my good buddy, Tom. Hey, Tom.
Hello. Hi there. Nice to be part of it all.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Today, we're going to do Childhood's End on Sci-Fi Channel. Looks like they're trying to dig themselves out. We've had a bit of a sci-fi drought on the Sci-Fi Channel, and then they come and they deliver us a mini-series based upon a classic sci-fi novel, Childhood's End. Tom, what'd you think?
Let's see. I'm glad they did it. I thought first of all, I mean, the original short story was pretty short and was part of a bigger book, so... So the original wasn't really much of a book. It was more like a chapter-sized thing. And I think the TV show could have been a little shorter. Okay. I think everything that they added to it just made it feel slower instead of making it more interesting. But I'm glad they did it, and I still think it's a really interesting concept.
I was surprised that it was really uncompromising. This is not necessarily the happiest story.
True.
They, and a lot of times when you see stuff, not just on the Sci-Fi Channel, but when they make science fiction for television, sometimes they try to, you know, put a happy spin on it or to try to, you know, lighten it up a little.
Mm-hmm.
That was not the case with Childhood.
No.
They really confronted some really powerful issues of science and religion and, well, eventual death of humanity and time scales that you don't typically see in modern science fiction stories, certainly not stuff on TV. And for them to jump in and do it in what I thought was a respectful way,
mm-hmm.
But definitely people were dying left and right and folks, wasn't a lot of laughs in
No, it was a little sad, and it was like 6 hours of sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a little bit rough. So all right. Well, why don't you give a brief overview? Just a brief overview, and I'll try to pull it apart.
Let's see. An alien race shows up, and they are preparing humans for a transition to the next plane of consciousness. And before that takes place, they try to give us a golden age of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
What the aliens don't tell the humans is that they are only going to take the children.
Love.
Another odd thing is that the alien race happens to look like devils, and the next level of consciousness winds up looking a lot like God.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is as if humanity has had these ideas of the devil and God actually came from what deep in our consciousness we knew was going to happen someday.
Yeah.
Or perhaps they had been there in our past and given us ideas that wound up being pictures in the Bible or characters in the Bible.
Yep. Yep. Was it the second coming? Was it the apocalypse? It really was an interesting, you know, turn between the spiritual and the religious perspectives of what all of this meant and sort of the scientific and political side of it. They just kept playing back and forth because some of the characters that were introduced, what was the woman's name? I believe it was Peretta, who was the very religious
mm-hmm.
person, and she was, you know, banging the bell, the gong early.
Yep.
Oh no,
yep.
You know, they're here to do evil. Don't listen. And you kind of dismiss her because you're going, oh, you know, she's just got that religious spin on it. You know, they're doing so much good. They're bringing
mm-hmm.
technology,
mm-hmm.
and then turns out, you know, that she in a way is right, but on the other side, you're looking at the technologists, and they've got the sort of politics bent going on, and they're really focusing on, well, we've stopped war and we're advancing the science, but I'm not sure I trust these guys. Just the way that the story took you back and forth and made you question, you know, your personal feelings about these things as you were navigating the story.
Yeah, I suppose that they left it vague enough that even a religious person might be able to interpret it as they wished. I wouldn't know, but
I would think there were a lot of biblical themes in this, a lot of ominous ones. But in the end, you know, there was that ascending into mm-hmm. heaven that is consistent with biblical themes.
You got the rapture.
So, you know, the good were chosen, just so happens they were children. So again, you know, was it the technology and aliens? Was it the spiritual and religious? Something else that was interesting is we sort of navigated this apocalypse through the eyes of regular folks. For the most part, we were there with, you know, a farm boy seeing what being the spokesman.
Well, of course. I mean, aliens, there are always interested in farmhouses.
True.
And cornfields and barns. You just can't keep aliens out of a barn.
You're right.
I mean, do alien ships run on corn syrup or what?
I'm thinking they're attracted. It's Kansas all over again. You're right. you're right. And, you know, whenever he called, Corellian would just pull right up in his little duster. Yeah. He would show up. So we got to see it from a, you know, a down home perspective. It wasn't, but then also we had the budding scientist. We had Milo from childhood grow up with that scientific optimism and the expectation of what was to come.
Yeah, I suppose you're right about the humanity of people, and that was a good thing, because in doing a famous story, they could have gone kind of mythical, especially because this is kind of a biblical tale. And in those last three Star Wars that didn't work out very well, one of the big mistakes was trying to make the characters almost act like they were being too respectful of the story they were in by acting like myths instead of human.
Yeah.
And so, in this story, you didn't get that. The people did seem like real people, and that was a good move, I think.
It definitely made the apocalypse more approachable. Which, I mean, it's funny to say, but when you think about it, we've seen a lot of movies where we've seen the end of the world coming, and it really is about the effects and the scale of the disaster.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, we saw the end of the world through individuals, through their experience, and other than, you know, of course, there was the Earth implosion at the end. There wasn't a whole lot of that apocalyptic destruction.
Yeah,
and that was an interesting alternate way. Now, of course, we could say for budgetary reasons they were doing it, but the fact that they really did focus in on watching the end of the world through the perceptions of each of these different folks. You know, sort of like the power-hungry Dr. Voice guy who thought he would be able to use the aliens.
Yeah.
That was sort of like the mad entrepreneur as the mm-hmm. world is ending.
And then he was frustrated, yeah.
You know, he wasn't ready for how things, you know, how things went.
Mm.
But the fact that he thought that he could control it, you know, there's always going to be that guy that's going to try to capitalize. I mean, you look at it, basically you have a demon walking the earth with all the powers of a god, and yet there's some guy who thinks that, you know, I can make a buck off of this, and I'm going to be able to capitalize on that. Then we have Milo, who's sort of the optimist, and he had the scientific perspective on this, and he was like, I believe that we can make the world better, and we can work together to improve things, and we got to see the apocalypse through his eyes, and of course his unfortunate sort of love story that was, again, when I say uncompromising, we are sort of led through his scientific obsession. He's going to get in that spaceship. He's going to go to this alien world because that's what he's planned for his entire life.
The Ark, another biblical
reference. Yeah, it's like, and so his partner scientist
Rachel.
That he eventually falls for. There's that sort of cool relationship between them. I mean, it's supposed to be a romance, but they're both so possessed that I guess it never really, you know, comes to any fruition.
Yeah, do they ever kiss? I don't remember. I mean, they seem, I forget. I think they sort of declare their love for each other before she packs him up in the freeze wrap or shrink wraps him.
Right. And you see, any other story would have given them some kind of a, I'm not going to say a happy ending, but at least, you know, they would have died together or something where they would have held hands together watching the planet implode. That is not how they went childhood's end.
It was pretty desolate.
They said, hey, we're going to freeze dry her, preserve her for the whatever hundreds of years it took for Milo to come out of warp. And then, you know, just take that necklace off of her and have her shatter into millions of zero-G pieces.
Yeah.
Harsh.
Yeah, and the aliens didn't prepare him very well for that either. They were just like, hey, you want to see your old girlfriend?
Yeah.
That was a little...
That was rough.
Yeah, it was a little surprising. That was
and again, then we had the prophet. We're looking through, you know, farm boy prophet's eyes as what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
He thought that things were going to improve, but at the same time, he had the sort of martyr slash prophet's life of, you know, knowing a bit of the truth, being so close to the god slash demon.
Right, and then he suffering. Flew too close to the sun deal. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. And he got was that part of the story in the book? I don't remember.
I can't remember. It was a really long time. See, I thought it was a novel when you brought it up. It was a short story. Arthur C. Clarke, who, by the way, has a general penchant for giving science and technology the better end of the, you know, the happier side of things.
Mm-hmm.
See, that tends to be the advancing thing, which is what again makes this surprising in terms of the twist. This is a very, very spiritual story. It really is almost kind of like, it really is more like a religious story, I guess, compared to what he normally does. And for it to go that way, just to recap. So we got our prophet and the plight that he has to endure and the plagues on his family and on him personally and all the stress he's got to deal with. That was unfortunate. So we got him, we've got the millionaire trying to make money, we've got the optimist young boy who then grows up, sort of falls in love, and then we've got the religious person who sees all the dread coming and meets her end. Again, these are all sort of like the archetypes of humanity and seeing it through their eyes as the world is coming to him.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think was the overarching story then? What was the theme of this? What was the purpose of this? Because I'll admit, I actually really enjoyed this miniseries. It's hard to kind of get your hands around, but I like the characters. I like the perspectives. I like the depth. I like not really knowing, you know, where they were going with a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what, you know, Arthur C. Clarke, he tends to have broad themes. He tends to, you know, say powerful things about the direction of humanity or what do you think? What do you think was going on here?
I don't know. I think he was doing the Bible story in a way that worked for anyone that could work for an atheist or a scientist or just about anybody.
Go ahead. Do you think he was saying anything about humanity? I mean, with the destruction of the Earth, I know that the children sort of evolve and go on, but what was he saying, that humanity had failed?
I don't think so. In honest truth, I'm not sure what he was trying to say. I think it was just the drama of what if humanity was going to take the next step in its evolution, or what if it was just a small player in a much, much larger game that aliens, that we can't even comprehend, are playing? And what if we're, that the whole, what if the whole history of the human race is just a baby step that doesn't really matter? I think maybe he is saying a little something about our sense of self-importance.
Yeah.
That none of the adults wind up mattering. None of the history winds up. None of it winds up really mattering. And the separation, the rebirth is very, very painful.
That's good.
So maybe something like that. But I just think a storyteller is looking for big drama.
No, I like that, Tom. I think
he was taking a perspective that was very, very terrifying for human beings. Mm-hmm. You know, how we had problems when the sun was the center of the universe instead of the earth, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And maybe he was just taking that to the extreme for a good dramatic effect.
Clark does a great job of altering our sense of scale about things. Most of the stories that he tells sort of knocks you out of a traditional frame of expectation and of perspective, and always takes you someplace bigger and someplace broader. Mm. And I think, yeah, you really got it, because, okay, we always like to liken the stories of aliens showing up on Earth to like the old colonial type of things where, right, you know, where
Europeans showing up in America,
showing up in America, and what impact that would have on the native peoples. And the native peoples mind their own business. They had their own culture. They had their own wisdom and expectations for the future and all of that. And then you get the colonists showing up, and just in a short time, everything changes. And in a way that the people, the native peoples, could not have expected, were not prepared for. And it's very, it's traumatic.
It's traumatic.
You
yeah.
got it. You
yeah,
got
yeah,
it. Yeah. And that is just amongst humanity. So if we were to try to scale this up and look at it from the perspective of aliens encountering humanity and the bureaucratic hierarchy that he implies, you know, that Karelin implies.
Right,
so,
yeah.
You know, we see them as gods in this story, or demons, or as all powerful.
Yep.
And halfway through it, he's like, I'm just the middleman. I'm
yep.
just
he's
trying
driving
to,
a bus.
Yes, you know, we're yeah. making way in the universe for an interstate here, and your planet
yep.
just happens to be here. And so I guess by countering the perspective of scale of humanity on that, not only are we small, but I guess it also sort of makes the drama of how we confront the end all the more poignant. And I think that, you know, when we finally see Milo by himself on Earth looking back after all the children have gone and the planet's about to go, I guess the story really is about how humanity would confront that change in the end. And what all that means. And, you know, maybe it's just about ice cream and music in the end is the greatest thing
yeah.
that humanity passes on. So, but bold, man. I, you know, again.
Yeah, it's really unique.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you won't find that story exactly the same way anywhere else, partly because he managed to do a Bible story so well
mm-hmm.
that works for everybody. There was another one of the other things that was very biblical about it, but is more better explained, I think, in the book. And maybe you're right. Maybe it was a book and not just a chapter.
It's been a long.
I may be mixing up my sci-fi authors. Anyway, was that just as one of the popular things with God throws won't let the devil. The devil's a fallen angel.
Mm-hmm.
That is never allowed to enter heaven, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, Karelin finally explains that to one of the humans. It might be Milo. I expected it to be explained to Milo, and it wasn't quite done in the movie, and I thought it was missing. That that the devil alien race is never allowed to ascend.
Mm-hmm.
They have reached technological and scientific, they've reached the apex of science and technology, and they have nowhere else to go. They've plateaued.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something not right about their species. Their species is never allowed to go take the next step. And it seems that they are kind of sad about that.
Yeah.
And so they're a little bit jealous of these species that they're taking care of and sending to the next plane. Yeah. On the other hand, we don't know a darn thing about this next plane. Mm-hmm. I don't know what God's doing up there. I don't know if he's packaging the little kids up into, you know, candy wrappers for aliens or whatever. I don't know what they're doing up there. Yeah.
But yeah, that's a very good point, because the story opens with us thinking of Corellon as this sort of all-powerful godly being. And then toward the end, you do kind of feel sorry for him, because he's not just the middle manager, but he's never going to be able to go
mm-hmm.
where everyone else is going. And it's just his job. I'm just, hey, we're moving on to the next planet after this. And, oh, yeah, here's your girlfriend. She's in a shrink rack bag.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get you a little later. So, yeah.
Yeah, he seems sort of lonely and like he's trying to make friendships, mm-hmm. but he knows they're not going to last.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's always he's got a pretty, pretty sad job.
Yeah,
this Corellon. I do like the devil costume.
It was real, wasn't it?
I kind of enjoyed it. I thought it was really neat. It was real traditional.
Mm, very, very.
But
down to the hoof, the hoof legs there. Yeah.
And I imagine, I don't know how much was CGI and how much was a big costume, but I got the feeling it was a big costume, because you wouldn't really see him all at once a lot of the time. You just see him kind of moving around. Like a Thanksgiving float.
yeah.
But he was still pretty cool looking. Let's see. Are there any negatives? You got any negatives? Anything you think that
it was so unusual? That's the thing that's sort of saving it from the negative. I thought the casting was interesting. I thought the acting was solid. It is so weird
mm-hmm.
that I you can't really put a lot of your traditional metrics on it.
Right. Yeah.
So the only thing.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
The only thing I think could have made it a little hard for me to suspend my disbelief. One of them was the deal with the scientists who, for some reason, Milo was like the only guy left who had any curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And all of the other scientists, it was like they had just given up.
And that was well within a generation, too. That wasn't like over.
Yeah, yeah. Over, and they were all like, well, we're being taken care of now, so why think anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Everything's good. And that's, you know, so why do any science? But I don't think scientists do things because of the good that will come out of it. They're very, very curious. So I thought that was a little odd. That didn't seem to me like a normal reaction. I thought the reaction of the, who was the guy who, the Irish actor who played the bad guy in this one. He was trying.
Oh,
to
yeah, early
things.
On trying to.
Yeah.
Colm Meaney.
Yeah. His reaction made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And his reaction was more like, you know, this is the Europeans hitting the American shoreline, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
rage
so that
against
that
them. It's there, yep, they're coming to take our land. We're going to get them. That was very. Yeah, there you go, cuz that's the thing. Each of the characters were sort of that a classic archetype of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And each one we got to see dealing with the, you know, and yet you got the radical. He was the terrorist. He was the terrorist radical trying to control things too. So yeah, it was
only other I for the most part I agree with you. I think the only other bad thing, and this may be because I have been, my brain has been warped by extant.
Yes.
But aliens seem to, these days, have a habit of showing you your dead relatives. They mess with pregnant ladies, and the babies that eventually come out, their eyes always light up.
Yeah, that was.
And that's getting old, sci-fi.
Yeah, that you're right. That was a little easy. That was a little easy. Yeah, well, I'll give you that. But hey, it's the apocalypse. I'll cut him some some slack. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. I think that's about it, because it was just so. It was so weird, but it's sci-fi is supposed to be different, and for them to finally give us something on the Sci-Fi Channel that was genuinely different, I'm giving them the slow clap and the kudos, because well produced. You could tell they didn't cheap out on it. They sure didn't compromise on. The scale of what was it they were trying to tell us in this one.
They were respectful, and I like that they're doing real. They're taking books that work, stories that work, and they're going to try to do them instead of things that don't work, like Under the Dome.
See, we were doing so well. This is a very, we're wrapping up a very high end episode, the Sci-Fi Party Line.
Just saying Under the Dome.
Not a lot of laughs, and then, you know, we slide in Extant and Under the Dome, and it's just like, oh, we're back to Earth. So thank you for joining us for yet another exciting episode. Check out A Childhood's End. I recommend it. Tom, you recommend it?
Yeah, I'd recommend it. Or at least read the book. The story's pretty quick, so.
There you go. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye, Party Line.